use the word desperate, but I just knew that I was despondent, that I was just, I just felt sort of dead inside. And one thing I can always tell when I've removed myself from the sunlight of the Spirit, when I look in the mirror and that the eyes, there's nothing there. And then I know that I've wandered off again. And then I work really, really hard to work back into that place of serenity. I have right now 11 and a half years of imperfect but functional abstinence. And I thank our friend John from Spokane. He was the first person I heard who said that. And I can't tell you that the freedom that that gave me, because coming into program that many years ago, we were all doing gray sheet at that time. And because that is so firmly implanted in my brain over these many years and the many changes, I wasn't sure that I knew that I was working the right program if I wasn't doing that particular thing. And I've had to remove myself from the rigidity of those early days in program. I didn't bring my big book up here with me, but you know that part in chapter 3 that talks about all the different ways we try to be like normal people? Well, I did graduate courses in there. I just was convinced that, you know, if I could just, you know, lose the weight, because that's why I came too. I didn't realize what else was going to be given to me in this wonderful program. So I was always constantly trying to eat like a normal person, whatever that is. I do have some relatives who are really normies, and it's a strange experience watching them eat. As they don't have any clue as to why I do what I do, and vice versa. But it's okay. We don't have to understand it. We just need to accept ourselves as we are right here today. And that's the biggest lesson I think that I've learned in program. My first relapse actually came, the first slip, I should say, came in that very first year. I came in July. And in October, you know what happens at the end of this month. And at the time, I had two little children and lived in a neighborhood where there were lots of kids knocking on the door. That was the days when they still did that. And I got in the candy. And I didn't stay there very long, but that was my first official slip. The thing about OA in those early days, I became a star in my own mind, because I lost my 95 pounds right away. I did my four steps so that I could sponsor, because I wanted, and you had to do that to speak. You had to be abstaining for 3 weeks before you could actually ever pitch. And of course, I knew that you'd need to hear what I had to say. So I did that right away, did it as far as I could tell perfectly. And it was easy to do it perfectly there then, because there was your list and there was no deviation. So you knew you were doing it. I returned to college and finished my last years, and I got a divorce. And I was 30 years old, and, you know, the door had opened into this incredible new life. And I was also, you're going to relate to this, I'd done my four steps, so certainly was never going to need to do it again. I mean, I did it. And I didn't do another one for a long time. I didn't get that maybe something else happened in the interim that maybe I should deal with. We didn't spend a lot of time with Big Book in those days either. We just followed the food plan, and then that meant that we were doing the program. It wasn't like that. I remember just this morning when I was talking to somebody after one of the sessions that my first relapse began. I said I lost, my top weight then was 265, and I had lost 95 pounds, and I probably kept all of those off for about a week. But this particular day, I was serving on a jury, and I was standing in the atrium of a courthouse on a break, and it was plate glass windows all around. And I saw this woman, and she was wearing a shirtwaist dress, blue, belted at the waist, straight up and down. And I saw that lady, And then I realized it was me. And it scared me to death because that wasn't me. And that's when I slowly but surely started to take the food back. It was that moment of non-recognition. And I was taking care of my two young children, divorced, taking care of my mother, who was very needy, doing my fifth year of college, teaching my first year as an intern teacher. And I was too busy to go to meetings. I had all this classwork and kids and children at school, 32 first graders. It was okay, though, because I had the program. I'd done my four-step. I'd lost my weight. I didn't need to go to meetings. So I didn't. It was okay that I didn't. And I didn't realize that it wasn't okay. But slowly but surely, I do things really slowly. And to see me in 41 years, you know I'm a very slow learner in some areas, and this is one of them. I was in and out of meetings during that period of time. I talked program all the time, but I sure didn't walk the walk all the time. So sure enough, I gained all that weight back. And in 1978, I met Ken. I weighed 250 pounds again. And it was sheer bliss. I mean, it was just recognition immediately. And now I was eating, not because I was depressed and lonely and overburdened and all those other dark moods, but now I was just totally full of joy and everything was perfect in my life. And that was even a better excuse for eating. So we pretty much gained our top weight together, and we had a lot of fun eating together. We knew that there was a problem, and maybe what we should do is we'd be really good all week, but Friday night, we could just have anything our little hearts desired. So that was great. We looked forward to Friday night, and then pretty soon it was Friday night and Saturday, and you know the story. Pretty soon I'm totally back into the food. And it was at that point, this is about 1981, I'm saying, Ken, we need to go to OA. There's something he had never done. He'd done the other weight programs, which I'd done everything else. So we went to our first OA meeting. Actually, it was the second one. The first one was altogether two sharing. Ken wasn't used to this. It was in the late 80s in OA in Southern California at that time was different. And it was a lot of dumping, a lot of very sensational stories. And it was just, we didn't go back. And so now it's May 81 and we did go back together. And I knew how to do Gracie. I knew how to do that really well. So that's what we did. We got right away, we got on Gracie. We didn't get sponsors because, you know, he had me and I had him. So why did we need another sponsor? So that worked for us. I mean, we were going to meetings, and we lost a lot of weight. But you know the story. He lost his weight much faster. Same food. I know this to be a fact because I fixed it. Same food, identical. He's losing weight lots faster than I am. Pretty soon he's weighing less than I am. And not only that, but everybody is just falling all over him. I mean, oh my gosh, here's this guy in program, and he's lost 80 pounds, and I was an afterthought. And my poor little bruised ego, it was very sad. After 10 and a half years of back-to-back really solid abstinence, I just threw it away in the Christmas of, that would be, eight, I can't remember which. It doesn't matter. I threw it away after 10 and a half years. And the amazing thing is that Ken just kept right on going. And he let me get into my food, and he never said a word. This would not have been my story. If he had been out there, I would have been at him every minute, which is definitely a character defect. Yes? You're a timer. Okay, 10 minutes. I can do it. Okay, so I had gotten back up to 250, as I said, and I'm back. Now I'm losing weight again. And the strange thing about this was that I was no longer hungry. I was not going to meetings. I just wasn't hungry. And I thought, well, gosh, Ken, this was really very simple. All you do is you just eat until you feel full, and then you stop. I mean, what's so hard about that? Why didn't I ever get that? Well, that began one of the most incredible spiritual journeys of my life, because what had happened was that I was experiencing the first part of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And when you have something like that going on, your immune system just puts down your appetite. So I wasn't hungry, but I was also very, very ill. And I went into a free fall weight loss. And I was really excited. I was dying. But I was very, very excited because I'm losing all this weight. And my oncologist was a little, you know, that's the insanity. He thought I was a bit weird. And, but I, you know, and there was so much else. That's a whole separate story, but it was an incredible, wonderful experience that I would never trade for anything. It's been 14 years since I went through my last radiation treatment, and it's been an amazing 14 years. Anyway, I began to recover, and I got hungry. And that's when I got depressed. And then the doctor really worried about me because this is here. You're doing beautifully. What's the matter with you? Well, that's what the matter was. I was gaining that weight back. And sure enough, it took me 2 years to fully recover from my experience with cancer. Less than that to gain my weight back. And then we retired. I could no longer teach. We had planned to move to Montana. We moved to Montana full of joy. This is just what we wanted. We already knew our community. Everybody was waiting for us. And so it was a wonderful move, but it was a change. And I reverted totally back to the comfort zone of food. And it happened again. I never thought I'd see 200 pounds again. I really didn't. And I now was going all the way back up. And ended up back up to 270 eventually. In 1998, the spring of 1998, I went to a retreat, a spring retreat on Flathead Lake in Montana. And there was a service opportunity for a secretary of the intergroup. And it just hit me. I knew that if I took that service position, I couldn't do any of my dancing in and out game that I had played for so many years. I was going to have to stick to it. We also had started a meeting in Stevensville, and there was a very small core of people there. And we listened to a tape of Natalie B. from Los Angeles and Espy. And the small group, there were five of us, committed to each other's recovery because I finally had it. That's a WE program. I couldn't do it by myself. And I knew that my recovery was very important for yours and vice versa. Your recovery is very important to me. So I got my abstinence back, a true abstinence. And I'd had a long plateau in there, and then I was given a food plan that I am absolutely comfortable with. And the obsession to overeat and to go into those little side trips that I'd done so successfully was removed from me. And so what's happened in the last 12 years, there is to me, and this is kind of radical, a piece of relapse is vital. Because it's the only thing that brings us to center and you think, ah, this is really serious. So if I hadn't had those three relapses, and I, you know, I wish I had a straight line recovery, and I wish that I was standing up before you in the weight that I thought I ought to have after all these years in program. But none of that, I mean, all that a wish stuff is just, you know, another one of those sidetracks that I don't choose to go down anymore. Service is vitally important, and I've done a lot of that in these last 12 years, far more than I ever did in early years. I just kind of hit out in the back and did what I thought was program. But now I really do live the 12 steps, and I live this program. And I share my recovery both from overeating and from my non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, because that's, you know, that is someplace that I can give hope also. And it was the yielding to the experience of having non-Hodgkin's lymphoma that taught me what surrender was, even for something as, what I thought, inconsequential as cookies and, you know, other food things that I just, you know, I don't have lots of no's at all in my food plan. But there are some where I cannot go there. And what I'm very aware of my eating behaviors today, too. I know exactly when I'm heading closer to that slippery slope going down. And I think that's awareness and an ability to see it as it's happening instead of being in denial until pretty soon I've gained 50 pounds. Now I really feel the feelings. It happened a few weeks ago when I realized that I was grazing, and I was a grazer. And I was starting, it fit my food plan. I wasn't going outside of my boundaries, but I was grazing. And I had to bring myself up short. And what I did is write my food down for a couple, 3 weeks every day. I don't have to do that anymore on an everyday basis. But boy, when I feel that little shakiness, that's the first thing that I do besides just yielding and saying, okay, higher power, I'm there again. I need you. What I've received from this program, my life went from gray to technicolor. And I've heard today so many pitches already about the limits that we put on ourselves that we're not even aware of when we, you know, pray for a certain thing. And then what happens is if we just yield, what we're given is so much greater than we couldn't have even imagined. And that's what my life is like. I couldn't have imagined the life that I have today. And I am so grateful because it was in this room, not in this particular room, but in these rooms where I jumped out of the box and into this incredible new world. And as long as I'm willing to be willing to be willing, and however many times you can stretch that out, whenever I'm in that place, life is good. And when I'm, playing little girl again and, digging in my heels and wanting to do it my way, then I'm in trouble. So 41 years, one size fits all in this place only. At 29, this program fit me, and at 70, this program fits me, and I continue to learn on a daily basis. And, oh, I'm so grateful for all of you in this room because I can't do it alone. And you're God's way of keeping me centered. And I really, really appreciate your being here in this room. And it is kind of nice to have a husband who's in program and who is an incredible sponsor, and I get to hear him. You know, I get to listen to all those things that he says to sponsorees. And that's been huge for me, too. So I'm just going to introduce my husband, Ken, and he can tell you about his experience with relapse in program.
Thanks, hon. I'm Ken. I'm a compulsive overeater. It's an honor to be here today. I see acquaintances, I see old friends, and I also see a room full of kindred souls. We are here. We are wonderful, wonderful blessings to that Creator that made us all. Qualification. I've been in the program, as Jackie said, 28 years. I came in, talked the numbers. Blood pressure of 210 over 150. Weight about 350 pounds. Don't know exactly, but that's what it was about. Two long periods of abstinence. The first period was about 15 and a half years. I threw it away, and I used those words precisely and exactly. I did not lose my abstinence. I threw it away. I accepted the gift one more time about 11 years and 8 or 9 months ago. So this current imperfect abstinence is 11 years, 8, 9 months, something like that. What did I learn? I learned so much. First of all, very quickly, I don't want to dwell on the previous time. I want to talk about what the relapse did for me and my program. Okay. When we had retired, as Jackie indicated, I was in relapse at that time. Just prior to that, as I said, 15 and a half years, I threw it away. I'd heard, don't get too hungry, too angry, too lonely, too tired. Well, when I am tired, physically tired, but more importantly, emotionally or spiritually tired, I am more vulnerable. I know that, but that wasn't the reason for the relapse. That was the excuse that I used for my relapse. When she recovered, when she was sick, when she was ill, I never even thought of food. It never entered my mind. Eating was not an option to make me feel better, to help her, to help me. It wasn't an option. But I'm a compulsive overeater, and my sponsor has taught me that I have an alcoholic mind. Read that part in the big book. She recovered. And when I knew that she wasn't going to die, it's like I relaxed. But I relaxed inwardly. I relaxed. My focus became on Ken instead of helping my fellows. Every prayer that I have ever read in the big book talks about making us fit vessels to help others, to become a channel for God to use to help others over and over again. But then I said, oh, I'm so tired. My wife almost died. I don't know what I thought. But I do know that after 15 years, one day at a time, we were taught that one day at a time stuff, aren't we? It is one day at a time. I paid my lip service to it for almost 5,700 days, one day at a time. And then at a potluck Christmas thing at school, I defiantly grabbed the biggest plate, a dinner plate, and walked around the dessert table. And I just, self-will run riot. I said, blanket, I'm going to eat. Just like that. That was his default. Is that what the computers do? They go to a default? Well, I'm a compulsive overeater. And I walked around that dessert table and I piled it high and I sat down with my fork or spoon or whatever I had with all my teaching buddies. And I threw away that 15 and one half years one day at a time. Okay? What did I do? In the next 14 months, 13, 14 months, whatever it was, one day at a time, I was into Ken. Poor me. Something very interesting. Last night when Lori was, or maybe somebody else, was it Judith? Anybody, or somebody up there, said, okay, stand up if you've had, been returning so many years. And that was what I reflected on during my relapse. When I go to conventions, when they say old-timers stand up, continuous abstinence, oh, poor Ken, you can't stand up anymore. That's what I was wallowing in. People said, keep coming back, keep coming back. I did keep coming back. I got a couple of 30-day chips that meant nothing to me because my pride, I had injured my own pride. I loved standing up. Oh, it was just so wonderful. I was really into me. I wallowed and I wallowed and I wallowed. I just can't get it back. I had it for 15 and a half. I want to tell you about the old days when I had it for 15 and a half years. And boy, I'll tell you right now, it's just tough getting it back. Don't lose it. If you ever lose it, boy, it's going to be tough getting it back. Tough getting it back into me. It wasn't about you. I wasn't doing my loop, my 10th step loop, steps 4 through 9, keeping my own house clean so I could help others. No, it was poor me. We had a friend, Elaine, could you tell me at halfway and then at about 3 minutes or so from then, please? Okay, thank you. We had a friend. We retired to Montana. We had a friend who lived in California, and she developed cancer. Jackie called her every day. Every day she called her. And it was on my natal birthday, February of 1998. I had been in relapse for nearly 14 months, gained back about 40 of the 130-some-odd pounds that I'd kept off for that period of time. Anyway, dear Bonnie, and Bonnie wanted to talk to me, and I said, how you doing, kid? She says, oh, Ken, I'm doing all right. I would say, oh, she told me, she says, they began my treatments recently. She was in the hospital at that time, and they're making me kind of sick, and some friends, brought by some goodies to make me feel better, to help me feel better, to offset the physical discomfort of what she was going through. And then these beautiful words, God bless her, but I'm not going to eat any of this stuff, Ken, because I don't want to break my abstinence. And I've been wallowing and saying, the poor me's, I don't get to stand up at conventions, nobody wants me to speak anymore. Well, poor Ken, poor Ken, poor Ken. And here is Bonnie lying in a hospital bed, and her first thing she's thinking about is not breaking her abstinence. I felt about 1 inch high. And from that moment on, I decided to, I have a choice in this matter. That's the whole point of what I'm trying to say. I had a choice. I decided to stop wallowing in the self-pity at that time. And thinking back on it now, I think part of that decision that day was when I turned the focus, my own focus, from inward to outward. I needed to love and support Bonnie. How could I possibly go in there and eat my guts out when she's lying down there fighting for her life, but her absence is so precious, this program is so precious to her, that she is just, you know, what a gift she gave me that day. So that's one of the benefits and one of the changes that how my program was augmented, how it was changed, thank you, how it was strengthened. And from that time on, I have known that for me, relapse, just to remain in that relapse state, for me, was a choice. And if you are a compulsive overeater like me, you have that choice too. I believe that each and every one of us, one day at a time, can choose to abstain that day. It is this day. Your relapse can be over today if you're like me, if you so choose it, if you're like me. I am a bottom-feeding, my friend Elaine says, is a bottom-feeding compulsive overeater. I've gone into the garbage. I've wrapped up the goodies, and I've put them in the trash can knowing damn well I'm going to go back there and bring them back out. I've picked up food off the floor and eaten it. I've bought goodies on the way home from work in little sacks and shoved them down my, almost strangled while I'm driving the car, putting the wrappers underneath the front seat so nobody can know, you know, brushing off the sugar flakes off my shirt. Never mind I weighed 350 pounds, you know, eat, until I had diarrhea and gas so bad that night, you know, like I can't stand it, but as soon as that passes tomorrow, I'm going to be right at it again. That's what I did all those years. That's how I got to 350 pounds. I'm not there today. Last week, I think I weighed 210. Now, that's one of God's miracles. That's one of God's miracles. And also, there is a physiological change that happens. I see a couple of you with a couple of gray hairs. They told us when we were young that as you age gracefully, your body requires less food. Yeah. I heard that in my 40s and my 50s and my 60s. Let me tell you, it's the truth. My body doesn't need as much food as it used to. I don't like that. The amount of food that I used to eat on which I lost weight, now I gain. I really don't like that. So it's cutting back and cutting back and cutting back. But as long as I am focused on you and keeping myself a fit vessel, in fit spiritual condition, sponsoring is one of the other ways. How are we doing there, Elaine? Okay. My sponsoring now is not about me. The first 15 years, I guess I was doing the best I could. I thought I was. But I was picking and choosing. Let's see. You want me to be your sponsor? I'll just quietly think. I wonder if this one's going to make it. Because it's going to reflect on me, you know. No. That... My focus. The relapse gave me a chance to reevaluate my focus and to show me that I had choices in this, that I was not hopeless and I was not helpless. If I felt that way, it was my decision to feel that way, just like it was my decision to throw away my 15 and a half years, my almost 5,700 days of abstinence, as it was my choice to accept it again and redirect my energies and work those steps so that I could be fit to help you. You know, I'm not saying that sponsoring has been everything, but it's been a big part of it. I am willing to sponsor now for the right reasons, to share my experience, strength, and hope with you, that if you're in relapse like I was, that if you're like me, I say this over and over again, Jackie sometimes says, oh, Ken, you're so redundant, don't repeat yourself. I repeat myself for me. Okay? I have a choice today, and I believe you have a choice today. This can be your last day of relapse, if you so choose. It can be my one more day in a continuation of recovery. Why do I like numbers? I can't tell you why I like numbers, except that they show me what's possible. They show me what's possible. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm standing up here having spent a wonderful weekend with my grandson, who was born 28 years ago, and I was dying. This is a serious disease. It will kick our butts. He's 28 years old. Spent a wonderful weekend with him last week. He flew up to Montana, and we had a great time together. I came into program 3 months before he was born. 3 months before he was born, I had a dream that I wanted to share with him. I wanted to one day take him to Yellowstone and show him what the elk looked like grazing at dawn. This program gave me that opportunity. He's pushing 30 years of age. You know? And I'm pushing today. You know? Today. And it's all I have. And I say it's all you have. I say it's a precious thing. The big book tells us that this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. It calls it a subtle foe. To me, that means it's smarter than I am, it's slicker than I am, it's more durable than I am, and it's more dangerous. But I have a higher power. Big book says, lack of power is our dilemma. We have a higher power if we so choose to have a higher power. And my higher power can kick food's ass any day in the week. And today, this beautiful day today, I see it as hopeful, not hopeless. I have been the beneficiary of love and support in this program that goes beyond measure. I need to have my book, hon, please. It is a serious disease, but we have a serious recovery. And it's a joyful recovery. It's a beautiful recovery. And we do not have to sit in the shame, in the guilt, in the discomfort of compulsive overeating today. It's not necessary. We have a way out. We have steps to take. We have others who have gone the way before us and shown us what to do. We have a big book to follow. We have a battle plan. And if we choose to do that, this is what it tells us. Before we're halfway through step 9, it says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. Thank you. Oh, I think I'm supposed to read something now here. You get a chance to share now. Timer will give you 3 minutes apiece. Something about if you don't want your name to be out there, use a fake name or don't use any name, I guess. So in order not to have any blank time on the tape, if you could just come on up and line up and go right ahead, please.
I'm Jim. I'm an overeater. I came in to OA and I got abstinent. I came to one meeting and thought, not for me. I came back a month later and thought, maybe I'll give it a chance. Got abstinent. I was abstinent for 2 years, but I had a year and a half of incredible abstinence. And then my program started to change. And, you know, I look back and I say, one of the biggest problems I had was from day one, I thought I was going to be able to do this for a couple of years, get results, and eat like a normal person. And I call that a mental reservation, or I had a loophole or a tunnel or whatever it was, but I was doomed from day one. But, you know, in my notes, I say that relapse does not occur from one big problem, but several small ones that pick at us. And how we handle those small problems can create more small problems, or, you know, you can take care of those things. And my program started to change those last 6 months. And you know, as soon as I picked up the food, I actually had 2 years of the best life I'd ever had. I was in a beautiful relationship. I flew out to see my family, bought my own food, was tired, felt sorry for myself because I was, whatever, tired, and everybody was eating my mom's favorite cooking, and I thought I'd eat some. It felt like she had poisoned me. I called my girlfriend and told her how sick I felt, and I heard it in her voice, and, you know, that was not the end of our relationship, but that was the start going downhill, because the next day I ate something I shouldn't have. The next day I was in the airport eating a lot of stuff I shouldn't have, and I don't remember what happened after that, but that's when the addictive behavior, the hiding, sneaking, underground behavior, so I believe relapse is a process of making bad decisions, and I think it's a common problem. I had a hard time going back. I hear a lot of people have a hard time going back, and the funny thing is probably everybody's experienced it. You know, we think we're unique, and I think we've all experienced it. When I look back at the 6 months, I think there was observable signs of my program. You know, I wasn't going to as many meetings, etc. And, you know, to me, relapse is a process that's automatic and unconscious. You know, it is automatic because all I have to do to relapse is, you know, stop working on my program, and it's going to happen. You know, I don't have to think about relapse. It just happens. You know, I need to think about my program every day, and that's how I'm going to avoid relapsing again. And then last, you know, I think about holes. You know, I was thinking not just in relapse, but everything is, why do I keep falling into the same holes? You know, why do I keep repeating the same things in my life? And you know, what I've realized is sometimes I can fall into that same hole, and I can get out quicker by talking to people and, you know, my support group. But there's also, they're like, I can learn to go around those holes. And, you know, if you don't have a relapse recovery plan, if you don't identify what hasn't worked for you in the past and come up with a plan not to fall into that same hole, you're going to do it again. You know, so I try to look at those things and figure out what I need to do to make sure that I don't relapse. And, you know, I don't only have a choice of, I can try to navigate, you know, it's like a minefield, or, well, I'll use a street with a bunch of potholes. I can figure out how to navigate that so I don't fall into those same potholes. But, you know, I also have another choice, and that's to just take a different route, you know, just take a different street. So, thank you.
I'm a compulsive overeater. My name is Jan. I had, I said I had 4 years of abstinence, back-to-back abstinence, and then I threw it away. And I use that term, I've used that term many times, and it's the first time I've ever heard anybody else use the term, but it really was throwing it away. I made that choice to pick up the food that's a problem for me. And I had probably lost my abstinence a good 6 months before I actually admitted it, but I didn't want to tell anyone. I was on the Region 1 board. I was giving service at my intergroup. I was all sorts of fabulous things. I was awesome. And in my own mind. And I had lost some weight. I'd lost about 30, 35 pounds, and people were starting to notice it. And I was proud of that, but it also freaked me out because I have... My problem isn't food. My problem is all the other stuff in life that is uncomfortable that I don't want to deal with. And one of those was being attractive in the world. And when I started to get compliments, that freaked me out. And slowly by slowly, I took back foods that weren't good for me. I never did gain. I haven't gained back all the weight. I'm still within 5 or 10 pounds of my my lowest weight when I was abstinent, but it's not about the weight. It's about how I feel about myself. It's about how I'm being in the world. And, you know, I get a little bit of abstinence back, I lose it, get a little bit of abstinence back. And I never thought that I had a choice about whether I wanted to stay in relapse or not. I always thought I'd had to wait for God to give it to me. And while that's true, I also have to be ready for it. I have to be open for it. I have to be willing. And I can't say that I am today, still. But I'll come here, but I won't go to my own home meeting. Because people that I know, you know, I have to tell them the truth. They know when I'm lying, even though they're kind enough not to say it. So, I mean, there's people here I know, but, you know, they don't know what I did last week or last month or, you know, 6 months ago because I haven't seen them for years. It's safer here. And I just have to remember that people at home love me, whether I'm abstinent or not. And I'm my own worst enemy. It's not about me. I liked hearing that. I need to be reminded it's not about me because in my mind, I am awesome. When I'm yelling at people, I'm awesome, you know. It doesn't work that way. And when I was giving lots of service and, you know, at home and other places, that's when I had the best abstinence. I was there for other people. I wasn't there for me. And I have to remember that because it's a lonely world just having me as my friend. Thanks.
Hi, everybody. My name is Marcia, and I'm a recovering compulsive overeater and food addict. I can't believe I'm actually standing up here that I got the courage to do this. I came in the program for the first time a little over 3 years ago, and I, of course, had hit my rock bottom where I didn't think that I would ever, ever live again. I got the help that I needed. I got very involved in the OA program. I got abstinent. I found a peace of mind and a clarity that I had never known before. And it felt so wonderful. I did lose weight, although I was not really paying attention to the number, and that felt good as well, to lose it and to me not paying attention to the number. But that scared me after a while. I heard someone else mention that. After a while, people started noticing, and it made me very uncomfortable. That was probably where things started to go wrong. But then about a year and a half ago, I had very good abstinence for about a year and a half, and about a year and a half ago, I got sick. And it took them 8 months to figure out what was actually wrong with me. Turned out to be a virus that they gave me 2 weeks worth of antibiotics for that cured it, that maybe it would have been nice if they could have done that like 7 months prior. But in the meantime, I could hardly eat anything. So I couldn't follow my food plan. That part I didn't make a choice about. But I did make a choice to throw the rest of it away. I felt sorry for myself because I had this going on and no one could help me. I stopped going to meetings. I stopped working the steps. I stopped making phone calls. That was where I threw that part of it away. Once they finally did figure out what was wrong with me and why I couldn't hardly eat anything at all, I mean, my body actually went into starvation mode, and I actually started gaining weight while my body was in starvation mode. Once they figured out what was wrong with me, and I could start eating normally, whatever that is, I couldn't stop eating. And by that point, I'd gone back to isolation. I'd gone back to trying to do it all by myself and feeling like I couldn't have anybody else in my life. And I did that for the last a little over a year. And I thought, how could I possibly be in this place again? I swore to myself that I would never be in this place again. And I was. I finally grabbed a hold of something over the summer this year, went back and got the help that I needed, found myself saying, you know what, I can't do this alone. I can't do this without other people who really understand me. I can't do this without a higher power. I can't do this without making phone calls. I can't do this without meetings. I can't do this all by myself as much as I want to. That little saying when I was a kid, when I grow up, I'm never going to need anyone. I have to fight against that. And so today, I can tell you that I have 64 days of abstinence. And it scares me. I'm thankful for it every day. I do have a new clarity and a new peace of mind. But it also scares me every day, especially when I find myself getting too much into myself and my head. I have to stay out of my head. I have to help others. I have to keep going to meetings, keep making phone calls, keep letting it go, because I keep trying to take that control back. I also want it to be a little check mark that says, okay, four step done, ninth step done, but it doesn't work that way. So every single day I have to remind myself of that, and every single day I have to talk to people. So I just want to thank everybody for being here. And like I said, I can't believe I stood up here, but I just felt compelled and a need to tell my story. Thanks.
We thank you all for being here. Let's give ourselves a hand.
We have a very good suggestion here. Let's end this with a serenity prayer, please.